An interview with Josh Leiner and Mark Arbogast of Premier Athletics today on the Ultimate Ground Rules.
But I have raised you up for this very purpose, that I might show you my power, and that my name might be proclaimed in all the earth.
Welcome to The Ultimate Ground Rules, a podcast built specifically to encourage, empower, and strengthen the faith of coaches as they live out their God-given purpose to develop the next generation of leaders. And now, your host, Dave Pritchard.
Hello and welcome to The Ultimate Ground Rules. I am your host, Dave Pritchard. Thanks for taking a moment to listen to the show today. As always, please take a moment to like, share, and subscribe to the show, or even better, leave a review. Each of these helps others find the show on their podcast provider of choice. This show exists to encourage coaches, and today our guests do just that. Josh Leiner and Mark Arbogast work with Premier Athletics, a fundraising group in the state of Tennessee who work diligently to help school sports raise funds as easily as possible. Why do they do it? So coaches can coach and have the tools to maximize their impact on the lives of student athletes. You may be asking the question, why interview a fundraiser? Well, the answer is simple. Each of these men work with countless coaches and can offer a unique perspective as they see both the positive and negatives of athletic programs across the state. Today, they share some of their own personal journey and how it's linked to their faith, as well as some solid insight and encouragement to coaches based on what they have seen in the field. They brought their A-game, and I'm confident everyone can gain a few nuggets of wisdom today as the Ultimate Ground Rules presents Josh Leiner and Mark Arbogast of Premier Athletics. I am here today with Mark Arbogast and Josh Leiner, Premier Athletics. How you doing, guys?
I'm doing great, Coach. Thanks for including us in this. It's going to be fun.
I'm doing well also.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you guys taking your time. This is going to be interesting. It's a first on the show with interviewing more than one person, so it should be real interesting. And I think it's going to be interesting. Both of these guys, I'll give you a second just to talk about what you do, but I encountered them doing some fundraising with our program, and they work with high school teams of all sports across Tennessee just as a fundraising company. And guys, if you want to go into a little more specifics, feel free.
Mark, I'll let you take that first.
Okay. So 15 years ago, I started working with high school athletics and fundraising. Had no idea what I was getting into. Started that in Virginia and was able to move to Knoxville to take the East Tennessee area. And sometime in that point, I met Coach Pritchard and do fundraising with him, with other schools there. Our goal is to raise as much money as we can for different baseball programs, football, whatever sport it is. And then Josh Leiner and I have known each other for a long time, going back to college. And I had an opportunity to move back to Virginia. And so he was a natural fit to take my place in East Tennessee. And so he was able to keep working with Coach Pritchard and all the other groups in that area, doing the same thing, helping groups raise money and improve programs that way.
Yeah, you know, I think it's a situation like Mark said. It's just improvement is what you want to see happen. But really, it's just there's a lot of programs of all different sizes that have needs, and especially with budgets being cut and with different programs having major needs to just, you know, put gas in the bus or put uniforms on their backs. And so that's what we look to do, is if you've got a need and you've got, people in place that want to see that need be accomplished, we try to do that with all kind of different ways. I mean, all the way from a cookie dough product to a discount card product to an online, social donation campaign, whatever it is we have to do. Just to evaluate and look at the community, look at the team and what needs they have, and then just try to go from there and work really with the coach, try to alleviate his anything from him so that he can concentrate and focus on coaching and his team and not have to worry about the fundraising aspect. So it's really been a blessing. It's something Mark said, You know, we've known each other for a long time. It really was, I truly believe, God's hand on both of our lives, and it's really been a blessing just to continue that and working with him.
Yeah, well, I know that we appreciate what you guys do, and some guys may be listening and thinking, you know, this is kind of weird why you got some fundraising guys on the show, because we usually interview coaches, but I think you're going to bring a unique perspective because you have your hands in a lot of different programs and see a lot of different things. So I want to approach this from two different ways today, and the first is just on a personal level, because I know one of your big pitches there when you work with teams is you've been involved in athletics, you know, your whole life in some avenue. And so I want to ask you a few questions on a personal level, and then from a business level, and from just the things that you see as you interact with lots of programs. So feel free just to chime in to all these questions individually. But the first one that I wanted to ask you guys is what's one thing you wish that you had gotten from a coach that you never did? Think of going back to when you played, whatever sports you played, and just, you know, the whole purpose of this podcast, just encourage coaches interacting with their players and how they can be a benefit and really make an impact. And so as you look back on your career, you know, what's one thing that you'd wish you'd gotten from a coach that maybe you never did?
Yeah, I'll be honest. I don't think I have something like that. I look back to the teams I played for and the coaches I played under. And I think I was just really blessed and privileged to play for some really great guys and great coaches. They were great on and off the court or off the field. And so I don't look back at any of them and think, man, I wish I had gotten this, or I wish they had done this for me. I see it with this job. I see those type of coaches where, you know, there might be some things lacking here and there. But for me personally, I think I was completely blessed to have great guys, godly guys coaching me, which was awesome.
Yeah, that's I guess that's a blessing to be able to say that. And I think I would follow that up too. The one thing, like when you asked that question, that immediately came in my mind is I've got a 10-year-old son. We've got three kids. We've got a 10-year-old. She'll be 7 tomorrow, 7 and a 3. But from my 10-year-old, who's getting extremely, you know, involved in sports right now, and my perspective on it is it's just been hyper accelerated. Whereas, you know, I'm 42 years old. It was truly rec ball in all three sports. But now with him, everything is just hyper accelerated where he's getting a pitching lesson at 10 years old. And so when you ask that question, I think the thing for me, and this isn't, I would not single out a coach, but it might be more of a personal thing, is I just wish from a personal standpoint, I probably would have been pushed a little more. But like I said, I think that's probably just our culture in the last 15 to 20 years is I think there could have been, just from a personal standpoint, some things that I think I look back on and said, you know, I could have probably worked a little harder in that, whatever area that is. So that's just, you know, and like Mark said, I had good experiences with all, I didn't have any horror stories, you know, from many coaches that I played for.
That's good. So if we flip the script there and look at the positive, in both your lives, you know, what do you remember being most impactful in your days as an athlete? What really stands out to you when you think back on those times?
For me, it's the relationships with those coaches and the teams in general. I couldn't look back and tell you how many wins we had or how many losses, although I still think about some of that stuff. But I can look back at individual coaches and just how they were with me personally and with the rest of the team, and how they showed so much love to us on and off the court, and they made it so much bigger than a win or a loss. It was more about life. And I went to a Christian school, so I had some godly guys that were coaches. And so they made it to where your relationship with Christ is the number one thing over winning and losing. So we had a great relationship off the court. I remember going to college basketball games with these coaches, and they just invested time in me and in the other guys on the team. So that's something that, you know, I'll remember and take away for the rest of my life. I still talk to those guys, and I mean, they made a huge impact on my life because they invested in me personally, not just in the sport and winning and losing.
Yeah, I think for me, when you use the word impactful, you know, again, looking back on it as a 42-year-old, I think it's just you don't realize, like everything else in life almost, you don't realize how quick it goes, you know. And if I could, and I don't pour that into my 10-year-old so much because he's just 10, but sometimes when I see these high school kids, these seniors that I, you know, like your program, you know, some of those seniors you've got, I mean, since we work with your middle school program, I've seen those kids since they were seventh grade. And it really goes so fast. And so I think if you use the word impactful, it was just that, just to soak up those times that you're actually in a game. You know what I mean? Like when you're watching your kids now, you like, you're not playing anymore. You know what I'm saying? And so you really want to, I think that's one thing that, you know, when you ask that question, is just how those times, even from middle school to high school, are just, I mean, you know, some really, really special times, like Mark said, and being able to cherish that and savor that, so to speak.
And I knew it was good then, but I look back and I would go back in a heartbeat to relive some of those days and those games and those relationships with the guys on the court, the coaches. I mean, it was special. It was fun. And it does go so fast, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, I want to put you on the hot seat a little bit here. And as you look back at those times, you know, if you had to pick one guy, your favorite coach, who was it and why?
I'd have to say there's two coaches I'd have to mention. One would be a JV coach and one is a varsity coach. My JV coach's name was Phil Myron, and he was a guy who pushed you as much as he could and wanted to get the best out of you and would make you work so hard and really just taught me the discipline of hard work and what that can do for you. My varsity coach, Jim Farmer, was a great guy who I still talk with a lot and just share a lot with in life. And I was speaking at my old high school recently, and I actually told a story about a devotion he shared with us at a tournament in South Carolina. So over 20 years ago, that one story, that one devotion, made an impact on me. It's something I've remembered and I've told other people. So both of those are just guys that, man, I look up to, I love. If I'd had a bigger wedding, I'd had both of those guys in my wedding probably. But they just made an impact on me just in the way they treated me and valued me as a person.
I think for me personally, it's probably a guy that was, he was a quarterback's coach of mine. His name is Kip Jones. His dad was Chris Jones. He's got the nickname, the Shot Doctor. A lot of people may have, he coached at Carson Newman, up in Jefferson City for a lot of years. But anyway, Kip played quarterback at Wingate over in North Carolina. And he was a coach, basketball, baseball, just everything coach. And when you asked that question, he was the first face that popped in my mind. And I think more than anything was he made it fun and didn't take himself too seriously. And I could tell all kind of stories on him, but in pressure situations, he really tried to alleviate things with humor. And those are the things that I told my old son some of the stories that happened between he and I and between he and our teams. And so I think that's one guy that I would, if I had to single one out, you know, I had several that I could probably look to, but that's one guy that made that time of my life a fun time.
That's awesome. I know one thing that I ask all the coaches that I talk to, is this one question, and you interact with a lot of high school kids. And Josh, I'd even like to hear you answer this because you've got a unique perspective. I'd like to hear you answer this next question through the lens of 8, 9, 10-year-old and also for the high school kid. But what do you think that a player needs most from his coach?
You know, that's a great question, and it's a very broad question. But I think from my perspective and just the world that we're in now versus the world kind of that I grew up in, not that it's too different, but it just seems different now because things are, you know, I guess information's a lot more available, I guess, now than it was kind of when I was going up. But what I see now from just our society in general, even at 8, 9, 10-year-old, it doesn't change much into high school now, is that you're in a society that is, I mean, for all intents and purposes, kind of gone crazy, and there's a lot of distortion to family structure and to identity and all this kind of stuff. I think for the high school athlete right now, on the majority, he or her, they just need somebody that believes in them. Somebody that they can look, whether they're a good athlete, whether they're the starting lineup or the bench player, they need a guy or a gal that they can look out. Like Mark just said, that's a tremendous testimony for the JV and that varsity coach. I think Dave Pritchard one day would love to say, man, I've been in 10 weddings in the last 5 years. You know what I'm saying? I think they need a guy that just unwavering support, unwavering encouragement, somebody that, you know, I was in a sales meeting a long time ago, and this guy was a former coach, and he said, everybody has a flashing sign on their chest that says, make me feel special. And that stuck out to me because it's so true, and it doesn't take much to encourage a kid because they're not getting it from the majority. I'm not saying that that's not a blanket statement, but for the majority, most kids aren't getting that from the home where they're at, you know? So from a coach standpoint, I think that's number one for me, is just, I need a guy that believes in me. Somebody that, despite what happens on the field, I know coach believes that I can play this sport, or yes, I can contribute to this team, but more importantly, yes, I can be something that I'm not right now, you know?
Right. Yeah. What do you think, Mark?
That's tough to follow up because I think he said, everything was spot on there. I would just add the word love. If you have a guy who loves you and wants the best for you, and like Josh said, who believes in you, man, that goes a long way. That can completely change the confidence of a kid, of a 14, 15, 18-year-old kid. And when somebody looks them in the eye and says, hey, I love you, or I believe in you, I know you can do this, that goes so far. And especially when they know it's not based on their performance. Like if you win, if you get us baskets or hits or whatever it may be, then I show you that attention. But through the thick and the thin, if that coach believes in that person, believes in that player, man, that goes so far beyond sports.
So how does your faith play a role in what you do? How does it motivate you or guide you, just both in your personal life and even in your professional life?
Well, it's the number one thing in my life, and it has been for a long time, ever since I became a believer. So you go back to high school and the decisions you make there and where to go to college and what to do in college, what to study, what to do afterwards. I think just completely relying on Christ and trusting Him and His plan for you. So I firmly believe that's what brought me this job. And I can look at so many sequences of events that that back that up. And the fact that Josh and I met in college, and my sophomore year of college, I met him and became friends. And And all of a sudden it came a point to where we could work together. And it's just cool to look back at all these events over the last 20 years and see the Lord's hand in that. So my faith is, it governs everything, personally, family, with work, with the decisions with work. And I just try to take that to every school I work with and every coach and live by that faith. And just grateful for what the Lord has blessed us
with. Yeah, I mean, everything he said is exactly kind of where I'm at in my life. I think you asked, what role does faith play in your life, or what role does faith play in what you do? And it better play a role in everything you do. You know, I mean, like you said, if you've surrendered your life to Christ and you're, you know, surrendering to him daily, then whatever occupation you have and where we're at right now, that is fundraising and in sales and in helping, you know, teams and coaches, but that better just permeate everything you do as far as that goes, and how you treat people and how you treat coaches and how you approach your work, your work ethic. And so it's everything, you know, in the short amount of time we have walking this earth, you better, again, if you call yourself a believer, you better, there's a standard there. And so, I guess the easy answer is just, it plays a role in everything, that we do.
I would also add to that, living by faith and just trusting the Lord, it gives you a better perspective on things. Like, some of those losses may not mean quite as much, and you lose a group in the fundraising business, or a sale didn't go quite as well. It's a little easier to swallow, and you know, it's, you can kind of roll with things better because, hey, it's not the biggest thing, because you have your faith in Christ, and that kind of makes up for everything.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, you talk about, you know, maybe losing a sale or gaining a team, or, you know, you're going to have highs and you're going to have lows. And so, you know, as you move through life and you use faith as that anchor, you know, what kind of scriptures do you cling to? What's your go-to?
So for me, this goes back to when I was in college. I've always kind of said my life verse from this point, that point on, was 1 Peter 3:15. And that says, "But in your hearts, set apart Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect." And to me, that just means that as a Christian, I need to always be ready. I need to always be ready to defend my faith, to share my faith, always be prepared to share with someone the hope that I have. Hopefully my words, my actions stand out to somebody. And if I get in a conversation, if somebody asks about my beliefs, I need to be ready. I need to be prepared to do that. And if I'm not, then that's not a good thing, because I'm passing up on an opportunity that the Lord's put in front of me.
Yeah. You know, like Mark said, I've kind of had one that I've had forever. And if I write a note to somebody, I usually put this in it, and it's Philippians 1:6. "For I'm confident of this very thing, that he who began a good work in you will be faithful to complete it." Just because, you know, when you're early on and sometimes you have those downs, those trip ups, and you're trying to figure it out, like, "Lord, what are you doing here?" And that was early on, that was, you know, and it continues to be, God's continually working in your life. And I don't think we ever obviously get to that point where God's like, "Okay, they're good." It's a continuation. So I like that verse. Lately though, I've clung to a verse because, again, in the society we're living in, like Mark just said, culture wants to marginalize faith. They want to marginalize, when we say faith, call it Christianity. In the society we're living in, like he said, you got to be ready to to be able to know why you know what you know and believe why you believe what you believe. And so I always look back to Jesus. If I can just, you know, you're going to hear a different series of thoughts. You're going to hear different people argue on both sides of different issues. But if I just focus on Jesus and that verse in Hebrews that says he's the same yesterday, the same today, and the same forever. And man, that is just, there it is. You know, anytime there's something that causes your blood pressure to go up, I personally just say he's never changing, and he is the same. Like we just said, he's the same. If I pick up a huge school with a lot of athletes, or he's the same if I lose a huge school with, you know, a lot of athletes or whatever, he doesn't waver. And so that's one I've just lately just been kind of leaning in on there.
That's really good. I appreciate that. Here's where I kind of want to shift, and I want to get, I think I'm excited about this because I think you're going to have some unique perspectives here, but I'm just interested in some things you see and notice as you interact with different programs and different sports. So like you mentioned before, you know, you work with fundraising and you deal with football teams, basketball teams, baseball teams, all different sports. And so I'm assuming that, you know, in just a few minutes or just one interaction, you know, you can see some things. You can tell if a coach cares. You can tell if there's good leadership or not, if guys are being impacted in a positive way. And what are the things that you notice? What, in your mind, what separates the good programs from the not so good?
One of the things that I can notice right off the bat is how does the team listen to the coach when he's speaking? Are they dialed in? Are they looking him in the eye? Or are they talking and clowning and kind of doing their own thing? Basically, do they respect him or not? The best programs I work with and some of those stronger coaches, they can stand up there and they don't have to say a word. The guys know exactly what's expected. And you can just tell, man, they respect him. And that tells me that the coach cares about them. Probably not just about the wins and losses like we've talked about, but he cares about them as a person. And he's just kind of set the tone, and those kids follow his lead.
Yeah, Mark hit the nail on the head right there. Coach, honestly, it's almost within a minute or two. If it's a new program, I was on the flip side of that. I went into a program that wasn't like that. And Mark and I have done this over a decade. He said 15 years. We've done it, you know, 20-something years combined, 25 years combined. You can tell within almost a minute whether, okay, this is going to be worth my time or not worth my time. This is going to be a success for them or not success. Really kind of what he just – it's a tone, you know. It's a tone with that coach when he gets up there because – you know, these are 15, 16 year old kids we're talking about. And you know, immediately whether, and the coach doesn't have to be old. I was at Hardin Valley down in Knoxville the other night, and it was a leadoff banquet. Their coach is 28 years old. He's young, but man, when he speaks, everybody's quiet and listening and kind of that's not groundbreaking, but Mark's exactly right. You can tell immediately whether that coach has the respect of his team.
So one thing that I'm really interested in and why I like interviewing coaches and different people so much is I like to get outside the box a little and, you know, what are some things that we can do as a program to really impact our guys? And, you know, I even want, you know, it's about more than wins and losses. And I want our guys to know that. And so we do a few things that are unique, I think, that to be quite honest with you, they don't really have a whole lot to do with baseball, but I'm trying to really make a lasting impact on those guys. And maybe like Mark talked before about that devotional, maybe some things that they'll remember for the rest of their life. But, you know, as you interact with the different programs, you know, what have you seen just in talking with other coaches that they do to really try to impact that whole person that maybe is unique or different that you don't run across every day?
I'm not sure I've noticed or heard anything unique But the common thing, I think, is that they make sure the guys know that they care about them. And then you hear about times that they have off the field or off the court or whatever it is, away from the sport, whether it's doing a meal together or hanging out with those guys, doing something as a team. Like you just said, doing stuff out of the box that's nothing sports related, that's probably the best stuff, just to get away from the game, get away from the wins and losses and the normal grind of a practice, and just go do a team building activity. I've heard of teams doing that type stuff together, going on a road trip to a baseball game. I think things like that just build camaraderie. It builds a bond, it builds trust. And I think that allows a coach and a player to open up with each other and to build that relationship deeper than when it's just on the baseball diamond or the baseball court or the football field or whatever it is.
You know, I don't know. You probably honestly don't get an opportunity, coach, to talk about your own program, but I actually brought up you in an example earlier this week. And correct me if I'm wrong on this, but the mother-son banquet you do, that is geared around Valentine's Day. Is that right?
We usually do it the last Saturday before opening day, like before the madness starts.
Before the madness starts. And that is an example of one I would use if somebody else was asking me this question, is I think that is incredible. I mean, you're again, giving that son an opportunity, and he writes a note. Am I right about that? Writes a note to his mom, or she writes a note to him.
Yeah, he has they both write a letter to each other, and then the young man has to stand up and speak about his mom in front of his
team. Yeah, I love that. I mean, that's just that. Yeah. That is an example. Another one that I'll give you is Casey Taylor up at Sevier County. He always is having different people from the community, or maybe from a church, or maybe from a civic organization, come in and talk to his team. And I think that's another thing that you can kind of look to or point to that's outside of baseball, is maybe it's a veteran, maybe it's a senior, somebody that's been around the block, maybe it's a pastor. And then another thing, when you ask that question, that just really stuck out to me is, the way that programs are now, programs really have off season where you've got 10 or 12, 14 guys showing up, or whatever that number is for you. Is I've seen, some coaches really not make it about, especially with the age group that you're dealing with, is that it's so hard to drive selfishness out of people in general, but especially kids, and that you get a service project. I saw a team post something on Twitter about, hey, they went and spent an afternoon at Habitat for Humanity, and you've got these 15-year-old kids hammering nails. I mean, I was just like, that's awesome, because I didn't do that when I was in school, you know what I mean? And so there's probably a lot of opportunities for just service and as a team, like Mark said, just, breaking bread together is some of my favorite memories were those meals after games. When something crazy happens, or you've got a jokester or whatever. So, I think those are just some things I've noticed. Just, like you said, that thing you do with the father or the mom and son is just awesome. And, some of those speakers and things like that.
So one burden that's on my heart that, is part of the reason that this show was born, but I'm 40 years old and I'm not an old guy, but in the sports world, in high school baseball, I'm starting to feel a little old just because of the high turnover that I'm seeing. I would guesstimate that the average life of a head coach in the last decade has been 4 or 5 years, probably, if it's not shorter than that. And so, in my view, that's a big problem because, guys need stability, school needs stability. When you have constant turnover, that's just not a good thing for the student athlete, for the community, for anything. So, I'm sure you guys have seen the same thing. And what would you say to maybe coaches listening, maybe young coaches listening, to encourage them just to stay in the game and to push through you know, the parents, difficulty with parents, or difficulty with, you know, maybe I can go and do something else and make more money, you know, whatever it is. How would you guys encourage those coaches?
Yeah, I would encourage them that, hey, if they're called to do this, they're called by the Lord to be a coach and a mentor, to keep at it. There's going to be those tough times. I mean, we all see it. We hear about it, the different issues. There's so much more pressure now to win. I've seen so many good programs that have great coaches that are completely undervalued by the community or parents or whoever, because they only won 5 football games instead of 8. But what they're doing off the field is remarkable. And I, you know, it's so discouraging to me. So I know it's got to be discouraging to a coach. So I would just say to them that, hey, you're making an impact when it's not just about wins and losses, and you're making an impact on these guys, and you're doing things that are helping them to become men in life. And years later, like Josh said, how cool would that be if you're in 10 weddings in the next few years or whatever, because, hey, that's a testimony to you and to what your impact is and what you're pouring into those guys. And a lot of times we're not going to know the impact. A lot of times these coaches aren't going to see that impact for maybe years down the road, or maybe not ever, but there's a huge impact.
Yeah. Coach, if you're talking about what Mark said is right as far as a calling, I'll be honest though. If you're not looking at it from a spiritual standpoint, like, it's going to be hard to stay in coaching, to be honest with you, because, you know, the hours are long and the pay's not there generally, you know, at the majority of the schools we work with, it's a burden for me sometimes, because I see these guys, the guys that go 6 and 28, they put in the same amount of time that the guy who made the regionals, you know? And so, to be honest with you, if it's not a calling, I don't know the answer to that. And so Mark's exactly right. If we're talking to a spiritual audience here, it has to be a calling. It has to be something where you say, you know, a pastor that I listened to recently said, the only thing you take to heaven is people. You're not going to take that district title. You know, you're not going to take that state tournament berth. But what you will take is that young man that you said, you know what, Lord, you've put me here for a reason, and I'm going to be intentional about developing this relationship. Because that would be my only answer to that question, is to encourage coaches is truly see it as a calling, because, you know, you obviously have a passion for the sport, whatever sport it is. That's why you got into it. You are obviously probably influenced by a coach. That's why you got into it. And truly see it as that is, hey, this is where God has me. And until he closes this door, I'm going to go at it with gusto and really surrender to him. And because I think that would, looking at it that way, alleviate some of that frustration. But you're right. You know, I use an example of Claiborne County. Nobody would put Claiborne County and baseball program in the same sentence in the last 15 years. When I started working with them, they had 7 different coaches, 7 different years. And the Coach Foster up there has just, he's a chiropractor. He does it, you know, in his spare time. And he did had some kids that came along that were his sons, but they've built an indoor up there. They played Greenville in the district championship, or they made a regional last year, played Greenville. And so it's huge for their community, but it's like you said, there was no consistency, and he proved in a place that's in the sticks, you know, you can have success and you can have some impact there. So, yeah, you're right. But other than from a spiritual standpoint, I don't know how you answer that question.
Coach, how would you answer that question? What's your take on that?
Well, I mean, I agree with Josh, and I think you've got to have a bigger purpose. You mentioned Casey Taylor a minute ago, and we were actually talking about this very thing back at the TBCA clinic, and he kind of looked at me and just was like, man, this is bigger than winning, because if that's all it is, it's going to drive you crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, I know on my own personal experience, and I mean, every coach has been in the same situation, but just, you know, situations with difficult parents, or, you know, maybe you've got a group of guys and you feel like they're just not committed, and you know, it's real easy in those moments to get discouraged, but you've got to believe that you're in a bigger purpose than just winning a game. And, you know, I can speak to what Mark spoke about earlier, and I can look back on you know, if you look at Scripture, especially in the Old Testament, you know, Scripture calls upon us to remember. You know, it talks about remembering all the time. And you go through all those Old Testament stories, and, you know, when God did something, they would make an altar, you know, and they'd bring their kids back to that altar and say, this is what happened here. And, you know, looking ahead is the hard part, because that's where faith comes in, and we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow or next week. But we can look back, and I can look back on my own life and just see, you know, step by step by step, things that have happened, doors that have opened, doors that have closed, and know that, you know, that was intentional. God had a purpose and a reason behind that, and it's evident. There's no denying that. You can't chalk it up to coincidence. I mean, it's God. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you have to look back on, in difficult times, I think you have to look back and remember, you know, what God has done for me, and, you know, and what He's called me to do, and you have to lean on those things. And then, you know, the unpopular answer is, I don't want people to misunderstand this, because I'm in no means comparing myself to a prophet. But if you look back in the Old Testament at all the prophets, I had a seminary professor tell me this one time, and it really hit home. And basically the main idea was, you know, you look back at the lives of all those prophets, and God had a specific task for them that they were commanded to do. And, you know, the prophet didn't get to go preach the bad news and live a great mm-hmm. life. You know, he preached, you know, repent. And this bad thing's about to happen. And he had to live through it too, you know? And so,
yeah.
I mean, I think you just have to understand, you know, what comes with the job, that there's difficult things ahead, but if you've been called to do it, I mean, it's not an option until you get to that moment to where like Josh said, God closes the door, and then, you know, wherever He leads me next is wherever He leads me. And it's my job to be faithful. But I'm like you, I don't know how guys that aren't grounded in faith do it. And maybe that's why we're seeing short tenures and constant turnover. I don't know, but I think it has to be grounded in faith and understand there's something bigger going on here, because if not, you're going to be a miserable, grumpy old man.
Yeah.
I mean,
and I'll be honest, I see some of those coaches out there that are miserable and grumpy, because it feels like it's all about wins and losses and performance on the field, and
right,
you know, not the impactful spiritual part of it.
And you just, you know, there's a lot of faith that goes into that. I know you mentioned, you know, coaches may not see the impact, or you may not see it for 20 years. I mean, I think it's common that, you know, I'm not really going to ever know. So take the roster that I've got right now. The majority of the guys that are on our roster, I'm not going to know what kind of impact I've had on them for another 2 decades.
Right.
At least a decade. And I can point back to former players. I can think of one instance where I had a guy that was just, you know, he was difficult at times, and it was a constant battle back and forth. And there were days where you're like, this guy's never going to get it. And even when we got to the point of graduation, it was like, man, I don't know. Did I fail this guy? You know, I don't know. And then, you know, 5, 6, 7 years later, you know, I'm going through a rough time with just a couple real difficult parents and just a whole big mess. But anyway, you know, I get a text from that guy, the last guy that I ever thought I'd get a text from, that said, hey, coach, I know you're doing the right thing. You know, I appreciate all the things you did for me. Just keep doing what you do and don't listen to all the noise. Yeah, wow. And so at that moment, you're like, I guess maybe he got it on some level.
Yeah, that's awesome.
You know, and so, and it's just, it's, you know, that's what keeps you going. It's like, I'm sure, I don't want to speak poorly of either one of you, but I'm sure that your golf game is similar to mine. And, you know, coaching is no different, where I'm going to go out and I'm going to play 18 holes and I'm going to hit one good shot and it's going to be good enough to keep me coming back next time. And so you'll get that text and in a difficult time and you're like, all right, let's just keep going, right. You know?
Yeah. Great analogy.
Yeah.
Mark's a terrible
So
golfer.
I've,
yeah. I appreciate the honesty on this. Put it out there.
Well, one interesting question that I've gotten, and I don't know that there's a good answer, but I'm interested to hear what you say, and I think that a lot of other coaches will be too. But, you know, I know in working with Josh, I've seen your calendar. You know, when we're marking down a date, you know, when do we want to kick off or when do we want to shut her down? You know, I've seen your calendar. And so I know that your calendar is a lot like my calendar. And truth be told, yours might be worse because it's year round. But that makes family life hard, you know? And so how do you guys, dealing with all the schools that you deal with, you know, you've got to work with their schedule, not necessarily your schedule. And so how do you manage family life and balance all of that? And what kind of, I guess, what advice would you have for coaches in that regard?
Yeah, I think balance is obviously the key, and it's also got to be a priority. You gotta prioritize that. So when the times are down, when you're not as busy, you're not running those days that are slower, the day of the week that you're not doing stuff, you're able to spend that more intentional time with family or the time before the busy season goes. Sometimes it's hard to describe what we do and what a year looks like because it's not an 8-to-5 job. You're not clocking in an office. I mean, there's times that's slower. You're working at home some, and there's times where you're going 6-7 days a week. So for me, I try to take advantage of all the downtime to be able to spend time here with my wife, kids, hang out here, do family stuff. And I always tell my wife, hey, there's a trade-off. I mean, I'm going to be gone several weeks where you won't see a lot of me, but there's going to be other several weeks where you'll see a lot of me. And so, again, it just comes down to a good balance and having that priority to take care of family and be the husband, be the father that I need to be and not just disappear.
I think that's, Mark used a word there, intentional. I think that's something you have to do, is especially with your family, is just make the time with them intentional. And, you know, we live in a distracted world and, you know, the phone is so bad about just, even when you're with them sometimes, excuse me, you're not with them because you're, you know, browsing Twitter, browsing whatever. But like you said, it is a crazy time, especially this time of year. I was telling somebody the other day, or just as this is the time of year right now, where we've had some closings because of illness, and then now we've had some closings because of flooding, and that just can wreak havoc with our schedule. Because today I had to reschedule two different schools that were an hour and 15 minutes away. Next week, you've got three schools on Monday, two schools on Tuesday, and then somebody will text and say, what are y'all doing for Valentine's Day? And I said, well, I'm going to be in Cosby, Tennessee at 5:50 on Valentine's Day, you know, and that's the truth, you know. And so it's like Mark said, it's having that communication with your wife and your family where they know, yeah, I'm going to be getting after it. Like you said, you have that banquet right before opening day because it's go time after that. But then, you know, time slows down sometimes. And so you just have to take advantage of those times and be like, you know, make those times special.
Yeah. Well, I know we'll wrap up here and I appreciate you guys' time, but I know that the longer I do this, the more I, you know, the priority for me is associating with good people. And so even if you look at our schedule, you know, when I schedule out of district games, I mean, I want to play quality people. I want my guys to be around quality people. You know, I think a lot of guys don't think about opposing coaches, but, you know, I think my guys can even learn from watching them and see my interaction with them and understand that there's a lot going on that's bigger than a game. And, you know, so I want to interact with good people. I want my guys to be around good people, positive influences. And you guys would fall into that category, you know, even when you're doing something like a fundraiser. I mean, I want my guys to be around good people. So, you know, I just want to give you a minute because I know you guys do a real good job. And I know that there's coaches that are listening in Tennessee, all across the state, maybe that maybe need to do, you know, something different from a fundraising standpoint. And so, you know, what kind of information could you give them? How should they contact you guys, reach out if they're interested?
Yeah, it's real simple about what we do. Our number one thing is to build a relationship with the coach and provide a good service. We're not just printing cards and making cookie dough and stuff like that. Our goal is to run a complete program to where it takes the pressure off the coach. When we come into baseball season or football season, you guys have so many things on your plate. I go into one coach's office and every spring and his marker board in there is just full. You can't even read stuff hardly because there's so many things on there. So we know your time's valuable. So our goal is to make fundraising easy to where you're not having to do a lot of work. We knock it out. We get it done, get out of your hair and move on to the next place. So, that's fun. So easiest way to get in touch is probably coach, honestly, for anyone to get in touch with you. And then they could put you in touch with Josh or myself would probably be the easiest thing.
All right, Josh, you want to
add? Yeah, like he said, I mean, you know, a lot of times we'll ask a question sometimes, and it's a good question of if you had certain amount of dollars, what would you spend that on? Because sometimes an easy answer is when you ask somebody, coach, do you have any needs right now? Well, not right now. We already did something or we did this or, you know, I do a player fee. And that next question is, well, let me ask you a question. If you had $4,000 extra, could you find something to spend it on? And honestly, it's kind of a dumb question because the answer is always yes. And so sometimes people don't know they have needs or sometimes they don't know that, hey, that could even be a possibility. And like Mark said, we want you to come out of that process or that program when we run it with you, and we don't want it to be a pain, because a lot of times with fundraisers, when coaches try to do it themselves, I've had and it doesn't matter the product, you could pick a product, but I had a coach this week that the baseball team is running a certain product, and so we didn't want to do that. The softball team called, said, hey, I've got to raise $4,000. I suggested this product, and he said, oh, I hate that, I never want to do that. And I said, well, have you ever ran it with somebody who did everything for you, you know, and it's going to be a great situation for them. They'll kill it. They'll knock it out of the park. Great community. He's a strong leader. And I promise on the other side of that, he's going to say that will be their fundraiser for 4 or 5 years or however long he needs, you know, has those needs. And so Mark said it perfect. It's a program, and it's dealing with somebody who just wants to take and alleviate some of those headaches that fundraising can sometimes, present. And so, like you said, if you have a need and, you know, you've got some things that you want to see happen in your program, you know, just get in touch with you, and then you can in turn just get in touch with us.
All right, guys. Well, I appreciate you taking time out of your day to come on here, and I think it was very informational. I think guys will get a lot out of it, and as always, enjoy working with you guys.
Coach, thank you, man. Enjoyed it.
Absolutely. If you ever need anything else, just let us know.
All right, man. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
Thanks again for joining us on the show today. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe to the podcast so we can reach as many coaches as possible with a word of encouragement. Never forget, your job is important. God loves you, and He has a plan for you. Continue to build tomorrow's leaders and stand firm in the faith.